me pones un ejemplo. Entonces, si tú no quieres hablar conmigo, dímelo para yo no llamarte ni molestarte, porque nada más quedaba tú.
Real talk. Real people. Real stories. The He's Just Podcast. Yeah! Welcome, everyone, to another He's Just Podcast. I'm your host and founder of the He's Just a Social Worker Movement, with another amazing show for you today. But before we get started, I want to remind everyone that this platform was built because way too often as people, we were overlooked or labeled. And this is no longer our plight, and our fight is for anyone and everyone who feels a need to be understood. We are strong as individual, but unstoppable when we unite. Susan Polgar's journey is one of resilience, brilliance, and breaking barriers. Born into a modest Jewish family in Cold War era Budapest, she rose from humble beginnings to become one of the most extraordinary figures in the history of chess. By age 4, she was already making waves. Perched on telephone books just to reach the board, she swept the Budapest Championship for girls under 11. With a flawless score. At 15, she became the top-ranked female chess player in the world. More than just a competitor, Polgar shattered gender norms in a male-dominated field. She was the first woman ever to earn the Grandmaster title throughout tournament play, something previously considered out of reach. Over her remarkable career, she claimed 4 world championships, 12 Olympiad medals, including 5 gold, and uniquely, all 6 of the world's most prestigious chess titles. Her legacy extends beyond the board. In 2024, she was recognized by the International Chess Federation as the greatest female chess trainer in history, honoring her impact on generations of players. Today, we discuss her book, Rebel Queen, The Cold War, Misogyny, and the Making of a Grandmaster. Susan, welcome to our show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
It is such an honor. And before we got on set, we talked briefly about how delighted we are to have you here today. As a female powerhouse, there's so much to talk about. But tell us a little bit, how did you get involved in this journey and this walk? Tell us a little bit about the game of chess and how you walked into this life.
I discovered chess by an accident. I was nearly 4 years old, and I was in a search for something new and fun to do at home. And the chess pieces and the chessboard fell out of one of the drawers I opened, and with a big noise. And my mom came immediately, see what happened, what's the noise about. And when she saw it was a chess piece, she says, oh, I don't play chess, but when that comes home, he'll be happy to teach you. So that's how it all got started. About 6 months later, as you mentioned, I entered my first competition, which I won with a perfect score. That's how it all got started. I fell in love with the game very quickly, and I really enjoyed the beauty of the game on one hand, but I also enjoyed the fairness of the game. That in chess, unlike many other endeavors where your age, your size, your strengths physically plays a huge role, it's not so in chess. So even as a 4 or 5 year old, I could have interesting, challenging, fun games with adults, double, triple, quadruple my size or age. And that was really attractive to me.
You know what was amazing, and we'll get into your book a little later, your work with your dad and how he taught you about the game. There were moments at the beginning that you had to memorize moves and really get into developing the skill of playing with pieces that were not chess made. And he indicated something like, we will play with the horsey today, to kind of engage you in getting into that. Explain that process, and if you could remember, how you were able to think about the game as you were still a baby and really focusing on these pieces. What really sticks out for you about that time?
Well, I remember at first we started to play just with kings or just with pawns, you know, like the pawns with the goal, the so-called pawn war, with the purpose of the game being get one pawn, the first pawn that gets across and promotes to a queen. And so, you know, he managed to find how to make little games within the game. And I think as a very skillful teacher, psychologist by profession, educator, he understood how complex the game of chess is, the full game. However, he was managed to break it down to little pieces and then put it together as I mastered you know, got comfortable with each little element, each of the six pieces at a time. And, you know, anybody out there trying to learn the game or teach the game to a beginner, whether it's a young child or even adult, it's really important not to try to play the full game all at once. Because if you try to do that, it looks overwhelming. It's too complex, too difficult. And when you want to learn something new, I think it's really important to have the sense of constant gradual improvement, no matter how little, but you want to feel that you know a little more today by the end of the day than you did yesterday, and keep accumulating little knowledge, one day at a time. And that was really one of the important key elements that my father was very disciplined with and very consistent with, that he didn't rush me trying to, you know, play the whole game all at once. But it took several weeks until I got familiar with all the elements of the game and was able to play a full game.
Really shout out to your parents for really supporting you early in this way and having your dad not only teach you about the game and the peace and calm that comes with it, but the amount of books that he spent to really teach you the game, because he dedicated himself to kind of teaching you to play the right way. And this is a skill that I believe translated for you. Such an amazing story. I wanted to continue to get into, how did you become so good at it? Like, I know that you probably were learning from dad and there was things, but what told you, like, Susan, you're really good at this, and you just started dominating?
Well, it's about the consistency. I really believe in it. And obviously I'm the living proof that even though I had my early success as a 4-year-old, as we talked about, but I had plenty of losses and disappointments. I did not win every game in every tournament, obviously. But I learned from my mistakes and I kept at it. And even when the progress was slow, I never lost hope that eventually I'll become a master or a grandmaster. And I think that's what's really important, to keep that faith. And what happens to a lot of people, and not just in chess, obviously, but anything else, that they have all the enthusiasm, they start practicing and learning and you know, do all the right things. But then when the first disappointments come, or the second, they give up or lose the motivation, lose the faith that they'll succeed. And that's the difference, that we didn't give up, but rather used the losses as tools for motivation and to persevere.
That's a great way that dad kind of put his clinical practice into this, to teach you about winning and losing, such a difficult thing to do as a child. Tell us a little bit, what do you love so much about the game besides just playing it? What do you love about it?
Well, I obviously love to win. But I just like its limitless opportunities, limitless possibilities on the chessboard, and the beautiful logic, and there is just so much in it. You know, it's like I like to say, it's like a miniature version of life itself, because you need to assess your resources, You need to do analysis, you need to problem solve, you need to manage your time. In competitive chess, psychology is part of the game. So I think, you know, obviously beyond the game as an athlete, as a professional player, I think it really gives so much to especially young people to improve various life skills that I just mentioned that are transferable to any field of life.
Thinking about that piece there, Susan, are there times that you've gotten or you've gotten on the board in a specific time of your life comes into your brain or some sort of game or competition that you were involved in? And tell us a little bit about that.
Well, obviously I had many very fascinating games, difficult games, happy games with happy endings or disappointments as well. It's all part of a career, right? Some of my most memorable games were, I remember I was invited to a very elite tournament when I was just 17 with a former world champion and several top 10 players of the world. And there was one particular grandmaster that was very vocal about objecting to a woman being invited to such an elite, prestigious tournament. And it was even published in the Spanish major newspaper, El País. And I was playing him then in the second round of that particular competition. And I was really motivated to show him on the chessboard why I was invited. And I was so thrilled that I succeeded in winning that game and giving him the answer the way I like on the chessboard.
That's what I'm talking about. Show them with the action. Love that. Can you tell me about your birthplace and you being a champion? How was that? And how was your country lifting you up or talking about you in this way?
Well, I was born and raised in Budapest, Hungary, during the Cold War. So it has changed a lot, obviously, over the years. And when I started playing chess, my parents and I felt that in chess, unlike other sports, when there are obviously a reason for division between male and female sports, in chess, there shouldn't be any limitation to what a girl or a woman can accomplish. And we were outspoken about it, saying that I'd like to be the best I can, if possible, a grandmaster or even a top 10 player. And back then, the Hungarian Chess Federation and the authorities, they could not comprehend this idea. They thought we were crazy. How is it possible that a girl could or even want to become a top player among men or even play against men? And what we believed that in order for me to even have a chance to do as well as the top male players, I need to train and compete under circumstances as the top players do, which back in those days was all men. And because of that, I was punished severely many times. For example, they revoked my passport for several years, so I couldn't accept invitations for major tournaments. When I qualified to the male world championship cycle, they didn't let me play. They said, well, that's the men's world championship cycle, therefore a woman cannot participate. So there were a lot of roadblocks and discrimination challenges back in the 70s and the 1980s. Fortunately, when in 1988, I represented Hungary along with my two sisters, and we won the Chess Olympiad for the first time, dethroning the Soviet Union, who has won all female chess Olympiads in the history of Olympiads. After that, everything was a 180 turnaround. The chess authorities in Hungary and the sport authorities and the whole government, everybody stood behind us and understood that indeed we were right. And the way I trained, and eventually my sisters is the way to do it, and that's the reason behind that we succeeded the way we did. So after that, we got all the recognition that that was due.
I am so proud that you and your family continue to remain on this path. It sounds as if it wasn't as easy. Here we are sitting having this conversation, but you really had to deal with a lot of criticism, a lot of negativity, and you remain steadfast on your one goal. And this is very difficult for a young woman in the times of where males were dominating a sport to really step out and say, this is what I want. And you took some losses, if you will, your passport being revoked, not being able to enter competitions, but you stood sharp, you knew you had something, and really applauding you for that. Let's talk about your book, Rebel Queen. Why is this book so important to you? And tell us what we think we should know about the Rebel Queen.
Well, the purpose of the book is to inspire young people, especially girls, with my story. And my story is that I found my passion. And if somebody is willing to work hard at it, they can accomplish anything. That's really the message of the book, that find your passion, work hard at it, and you will succeed. And chess, in my case, was just a platform, but it really can be anything. And it also shows that it will not be a walk in the park. There will be challenges. There will be people who try to pull you down. There will be disappointments. And that's the whole point, not to give up, but to keep working hard, to keep believing in yourself, and then you can succeed.
I really like that philosophy, you know, the philosophy of the genius. You know, your father believed in that, and there was a concept in the book that talked about genius equals labor plus luck plus favorable circumstances. Everything sounds like it needs to fall in the right place at the right time. But I think that aside from the talent, there had to be this commitment. And it sounds like you really had to commit long hours in your own beliefs and what you saw to be your opportunity and to your truth. How long did you practice to stay sharp or to stay really well to play this game the way that you have?
Well, I discovered a game when I was 4, and probably by the time I was 7, 8 years old, I was training 6 hours or more a day. And later on, you know, sometimes I was training 8, 10 or more hours even. Even competition itself, you know, can take easily 10, 12 hours a day. So I have to be ready for that. And as they say, you know, when you want something really worthwhile, it takes a lot of work.
Did you have any challenges in putting your book together, and what were they, if any?
Well, it took me about 3 years to complete the book. What happened was in 2019, Queen's Gambit, the Netflix series, came out. Mm-hmm. That portrays a fictional character of Beth Harmon and her rise to the elite chess among men. The difference is that was a fictional story and mine was the real thing. And the other difference is that in the series they portrayed that her taking tranquilizers and all kind of drugs and alcohol was part of helping her becoming as successful as she was portrayed in the movie. So back then I got contacted by a lot of media outlets asking me whether the series was based on my life story or not. And I explained them that, no, that's based on a novel. However, there are obvious similarities, but also plenty of differences. And then I was suggested, why don't you have a movie made out of your life story? Mm-hmm. And I told them that, well, basically about 2 decades ago, I already had such talks in Hollywood with various studios, and I did not like the fact that they wanted to hijack kind of the message I wanted to give, to inspire young people, inspire especially young girls in a male-dominated field. And they wanted to take some other parts of my story to be a big part of it. And so basically I let it go. And then this idea got reignited of maybe there should be a movie made of my life story. And then I got suggested by some dear friends, including some Oscar Prize winner actresses that suggested that, well, you should write your memoir. Mm-hmm. And then a potential movie could be based on the book itself. So that's how the book came about when it did.
Friend, it sounds like your life is always going to be an uphill battle, but I also like my chances with you. I figure that you know what you're doing. You take your time and you know when and when not to move forward. It sounds very intriguing to the common person to say, yes, this was my life. And you kind of put a halt to that and say, there are some resemblances, but this is not me. This is not what made me become the person I am. And if I were to sit up here and say something about myself that's not, I am derailing my message, which is to support young women and young girls to step up and become grandmasters in their own right. So again, I salute you for staying true to that. I truly do believe, though, at some given point, your life must be part of a movie, because not only is this a journey of empowerment, it is a journey of showing the power of the woman and the way that you've been able to just smash all ceilings and glasses and whatever it's in your way. So really a testament to you. And I really look forward to seeing this movie whenever it does come out. I wanted to ask if you have ever, you know, thought about what you want people to get from your book. You say, look, whoever gets this book, aside from the message, and I want to get the young ladies involved, what is something else that we've not talked about that's in your book that you want us to know about your life?
Well, obviously, you learn a lot about the world of chess and how that works. And also, my second half of my career as a coach, how I used my experience as a player, as a daughter of two educators, how I implied or utilized those skills and experiences to give back. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important to give back to the next generation. I did that. I keep doing that through the Susan Polgar Foundation, which is a 501c3 nonprofit, as well as I did it for many years through the Susan Polgar Institute for Chess Excellence called SPICE. So I think giving back is a really important aspect as well, which I write quite a bit about.
You know, aside from giving back, you also advocate, because everything that you touch really, like I said before, you really have had to fight and make sure that you grasp that. What are some of the things that you notice about your book that have allowed you to say, I didn't know this about myself? I know that I'm writing about it, but I didn't know this about myself. And now here I am. Wow, I never noticed that. Any of that for you?
Well, I discovered a lot about my family history, actually, that I picked my parents' brain to refresh my memory from my early childhood, or even how my father learned how to play chess, which I didn't know prior to writing the book. It's a funny story that he was in freshman in high school, and one of the first week of high school, a young, attractive lady approached him and asked him, why don't you join our chess club? And he said, she said, we need a fourth player on the team. Otherwise, we cannot have a team. And my father says, I'd love to, especially looking at the attractive young lady, but I don't even know how the pieces move, you know? And she says, don't worry, we'll teach you. And that's exactly what happened. And my father joined the chess club and joined the chess team. And the first year he lost practically all the games except the last one. However, the following summer, you know, he spent some time learning and he came back. And in the following years, he started winning some more games. And until the final year of high school, he won most of his games. But then, of course, he had to focus on his college and making a living. And he didn't touch chess really much after the high school years. And not until the day I accidentally discovered the game of chess. And then he was very happy that A, he had somebody to play with, but most importantly, that he may have an opportunity to prove his theory that every healthy born child is a potential genius. And that's how our special story began.
Full circle, my friend. Really enjoyable to listen to the connection between you and Dad. The life of coaching, though, you were also extraordinary. So how did you walk into this? And how did you know, aside from giving back, you said, I don't know if I'm going to be such a good coach. Can I translate what I know into other players? And tell us about that process.
Actually, I started being a coach still at home, literally at home, because I'm the eldest of three sisters. And I was already practically a master level player by the time my sisters, who are much younger, started to play chess. So I could practice being a coach, a teacher at home, and I helped my sisters to become Olympic champions themselves. And so with that experience from pretty early on as an early teen, later on, I opened my chess school, chess center in New York City that I ran from 1996 through 2009. And then after that, I started the institute. So I was born into it almost, I would say, because as you said, we come from very humble beginnings. So it saved a lot of money, so to say, for my parents that I was able to also coach my sisters. And with that experience, I guess I kept improving as well as a coach.
Mm. Would you say that you were as good as your dad in coaching or just about the same?
Well, obviously I had a lot more technical skill than him because he was just an amateur player, was never really competing beyond his high school years. And that obviously was helpful, but as of the methodology and the patience and all those things, I think I learned a lot from him. And I would, you know, hope to say that I became better because of the technical skills, obviously, that he didn't have that I did.
We understand that your husband is also a player, if you will. Do you let him win when you do play him? And how does that go?
Well, actually, we want to keep being married, so we don't play. Yes.
I get it, Susan. So you give him a little taste of, oh my God, I lost. Okay, I get it. Thank you.
No, we don't play. We had to play a couple times in tournaments, but that was a long, long time ago. And no, we have not played in probably two decades.
Do you have plans to write another book, if you will? Because this book is about your story, but are there more strategy books that you've thought about playing and how to teach younger children, if you will, the way that you did to learn?
Actually, I wrote already. I wrote about a dozen books over the years. Most importantly, Learn Chess the Right Way. That's a series on for beginners and intermediate players with a collection of very carefully selected puzzles on how to improve your game. And there is another book called World Champions Guide to Chess that introduces literally how the pieces move, the way I believe it should be taught. So those things already exist. With that said, I'm thinking to write some more books as well, but probably some more technical instructional books, as well as I'm thinking of another book which is very dear to my heart about the balance in life. That's one thing I learned in life as well as throughout my chess career, how important the balance is. And that's whether in a chess game, whether you need to attack or defend, or whether, you know, spending, you know, how much to spend, whether save versus enjoy life. It's about the life and work balance. It's really about the balance in general in and outside of chess.
But it sounds like the game has also offered you that. It sounds like your same philosophy or approach around the game of chess has allowed you to do that. Tell us a little bit about being a world champion. I mean, just hearing that word and earning a grandmaster title through your career, winning 4 world champions, 12 Olympiad medals, including 5 gold. What are you most proud of? And can you tell us a little bit about that process?
I think my most proud accomplishment is breaking that artificial glass ceiling in becoming the first woman to earn the grandmaster title. And the reason why that's so special, because as I was growing up back in Hungary, I was told countless times that it's impossible. It's like literally physically impossible that a girl, a woman could ever be as good as the man. And I never understood that. I never accepted that. And even the women, they were telling me, top female players, that, you know, you're setting yourself up to fail. You'll be disappointed, you know. And I wanted to prove them wrong on one hand, but I also, more importantly, wanted to show the way, open the door to the girls behind me, including my sisters. And the second woman who also became a grandmaster was indeed my younger sister, Judith. And I think it's really important for women to believe in themselves and not to just accept that a man or anybody tells them you cannot do it. Mm. If you really want something, pretty much most things you can accomplish.
Thinking about your career, I mean, at age 15, you became the highest ranked female chess player. In 86, while still being a teenager, you become the first woman to qualify for the men's world championship. Then at 21, you become the first woman to earn the men's grandmaster title. I mean, this is the highest distinction. How did you rewrite the rules of women? I know that you had a lot of pressure, sounds like, because you knew that you were going to do something that's never been done before. How did you surpass any of those challenges, if any?
Well, as we mentioned earlier, I qualified to the Men's World Championship cycle. I was not allowed to play due to my gender. However, they changed subsequently the name of the event because it was called the Men's World Championship. And therefore, women were not allowed to play. So I'm very pleased that I opened that door for myself. In the next cycle, I was allowed to play. So was my sisters, and any other woman who is good enough today can compete with men. And also, I'm very proud that today we are 42 women who hold the grandmaster title, while there wasn't a single one who earned it prior to me. There are now 42 women, so we came a long way, and that fulfills me with a lot of pride and happiness.
As it should, dear friend. You really worked hard for that, and it's such a pleasure to hear that you continue to make history still today. I know that there was some political aspect to this in so many ways, and you had to endure some of this. You kind of experienced vicious anti-Semitism and people really being unkind to your family. Can you walk us through some of those times?
Yes, unfortunately, back in the 1970s and 80s, there was a lot of difficulties. For example, there was several occasions when my father received threatening letters or phone calls telling him that there was one occasion that we got a mail where his picture was included in the letter and his eyes were cut out. Mm. And the content of the letter was also very threatening and vulgar, and obviously he reported it to the police at the time, but the police couldn't figure out who sent it and couldn't do much about it. So there was a lot of those things. And of course, there was also the hidden anti-Semitism when they would remark behind our backs that they are not real Hungarians, implying that we're Jewish. And fortunately, we managed to overcome all of it. Despite all of it, the hard work brought the results.
Mm. Let's talk about your book title, Rebel Queen. What does it represent for you, friend?
Well, because I didn't accept the status quo. I didn't accept when they were telling me that a girl can never be a grandmaster. I inadvertently became a rebel, right? Because back, especially in those days, during the communist times, citizens were supposed to do as they are told, to the last little detail. And all I wanted to do is play chess and try to become as good as I can. And what that meant is to play against the boys, to play against men. And I was told, no, you shouldn't do that. And so basically that's what my life story was around, that I wanted to play with the best opponent, most challenging opponents I could, which happened to be mostly men at the time. And despite being threatened to be punished in various ways, I continued being a rebel and went after, you know, what I was going after, the grandmaster title.
Mm. In your book, Rebel Queen, you do speak about defiance and resilience. As you mentioned, it is a go-to book, not only about the game of chess, truly. It's about someone showing their grit. What does rebellion mean to you now that your book is out and you've shared this story? What does it still mean to you to be rebellious?
Well, I mean, obviously it's important to believe in yourself and go after what you want. I don't want to be rebellious. I don't want to be a rebel. Is just if circumstances are such that you feel that you're being treated unfairly, I think it's important not to just lay down and accept it without a fight. Mm. So even as a coach, I recall there were rumors at one point when I started being a coach that women shouldn't be allowed to coach men's Division I sports or chess, you know, and luckily they weren't really going forward with that rumor, you know, but I think it's really important to claim your worth and when it's needed, stand up for what's right.
Mm. Nicely said, friend. In your book, I really enjoyed early on, again, the relationship between you and your father. There was so much practice in the empathetic form of him to really teach you to be a whole person. It was really about learning the game. I did understand that, moving pieces a certain way, teaching you strategies, and maybe pushing you beyond to fight his own theory, because he had his own chip on his shoulder to kind of protect. But what I mostly enjoyed was the relationship that you guys build through that. There is a uncommon connection that happens through a game, and you and him are able to really spend countless hours really learning about one another in different ways that usually when you have kids, you think about sports and as you mentioned, oh, a hockey player or tennis player, some sort of other sport. But I believe that in him seeing the gift that you were provided, that you have this innate ability to play this game and you love doing it, I love to see that father and daughter connection and how that happened. What would you want to say to dad about this book and all the countless hours that he spent with you?
Well, obviously, I'm extremely thankful to my dad, as well as to my mom, of course, for sacrificing so much for my career and all the, as you said, countless hours that my dad spent with me, patiently teaching me, guiding me, re-explaining and re-explaining the same things over and over. And it's only thanks to him that I even got started on this road. And when the difficulties came, whether with the chess politicians or, losing games, he was the one who always encouraged me that you have to keep working harder and you will come back and we'll succeed. You know, without my parents 100% believe in me, I probably would have given up at one point or another, just as so many other young athletes do. But they made me believe in myself, and they made me understand that losses are part of the game. And that's not a reason to lose self-confidence. That's not a reason to give up. That's just an opportunity to learn and not to repeat the same mistakes.
Well said, friend. Was there ever a time for you that you thought about walking away from the game, and what kind of pulls you back?
There was a very tough period in my life in 1986, after I qualified to the men's world championship cycle from the national championship. And I was already number one ranked female player in the world at that time for several years. And there was a moment when the World Chess Federation decided to give 100 free rating points to all women players but me. It's like, imagine in a 100-meter dash race, others would start at the 80-meter or a 90, and I have to start at the 100. And shortly thereafter, even though I qualified to the World Championship cycle, they told me, no, you cannot play because you're a woman. And those were the times when I felt, is it all worth it? When will the discrimination, the unfairness end? And I was very down. And I remember my maternal grandma was reminding me that she's an Auschwitz Holocaust survivor. And she told me, my dear daughter, if you think this is tough, you don't know what tough is. Clearly implying for the time she spent in the labor, in the concentration camp. And that helped me put things in perspective. You know, it's, yes, it, obviously, my problems were nothing compared to what she had to endure. And, you know, eventually I managed to pull myself together and regain my motivation and desire to continue working hard and hoping and believing that I'll persevere.
You know, your book and your life and even meeting you here today really tells me so much that you've invested in family. Even through gameplay, you've been able to really learn about the values of life as if this was your kind of roadmap to how to do it. I learned about discipline. I learned about perfection. But I also learned from you about mistakes and how important they are, not to really focus on them, but to really address them. And that kind of push really doesn't come from an ordinary person. It really comes from a person who is grounded, ready to learn openly and really work hard. I mean, listening to you about the amount of hours that you've dedicated to this game, countless hours and things that you still seem that can still achieve. What has surprised you about where chess is now? Is it where you thought it should be, or should it still get more recognition than it is getting now?
Well, I was very glad to see the rise in popularity of chess in the past 5-6 years, especially thanks to the Queen's Gambit Netflix series. Also during the pandemic, we were all so restricted in what we can and cannot do, and online chess got to new records. You know, everybody was playing, and a lot of those people, I think, kept chess as a hobby. So we came a long way. With that said, I think chess deserves even more recognition, to get a bit closer to the recognitions and rewards to other major sports, whether it's football or baseball or basketball or golf or tennis. Chess players are still only getting a fraction of reward to those other mainstream sports, while we obviously put in similarly long hours and lots of practice to excel. So I'm still hopeful that sooner than later, the recognition and respect and rewards will close the gap a bit more with the mainstream sports.
I like how you talk about the power of the small steps. But again, as humble as you are, you do understand that more needs to happen, whether it is it becomes being taught at school. Because of the connection I shared earlier about you and your dad, there is a continuity that happens. And you, you know, really said it nicely. You talk about, here's a game that you really don't have to be fast or strong. You just have to learn how to play. And the flow of the game really mirrors real life. It allows you to grow as you learn from winners and losses, but you also get to understand the lessons that you learn from a wiser player, from a player who's more skilled than you to allow that. Are there things that you think our educational system should be putting in place? And I know that there are some schools that do have chess clubs. Have you visited any of them? And do you recommend more to be invested in our education system when it comes to chess?
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that the Susan Polgar Foundation very actively promotes. You know, there are many countries around the world that who includes chess in their curriculum. In some countries, in fact, it's a mandatory subject, like for example in the country of Armenia, and in many other countries it's an optional subject, because they recognize all the amazing things, life skills, that chess teaches in a playful and fun and inexpensive way, such as the analytical skills, the problem-solving skills, focus and concentration, learning how to handle wins and losses, and more. So I think it's an absolutely wonderful thing? I personally believe chess should be taught in every school, not as a sport, not necessarily to raise champions, but to improve the thinking skills, the focus, the concentration, the problem-solving skills of our children. So for those reasons, I'm a huge advocate on getting chess in the schools. And well, if as a side result, there will be a 1% or a 0.1% of the kids who want to be more serious about chess and go to chess clubs and competitions, that's great. But that's not necessarily the point of it.
I've not looked at what the data shows of what a child who invests hours or time playing chess, what that translates. But I can tell from your demeanor that playing chess for a long time gives you a third eye, so to speak. You have this ability to really see things happening before they unfold. It must be a great opportunity to have that superpower to see things as they really don't develop, but you see them coming. It should be something to be, talked about, because I feel that it is an opportunity for our listeners as well to take advantage. How can we connect with you if we want to learn how to play chess? How do we reach out or learn how to play chess if our listeners want to begin this game?
Well, you can obviously reach the Susan Polgar Foundation. You can just go to my website and click on Foundation. You can reach out through there. That's simplest. Obviously, my time is very limited, but I have great resources. As I mentioned earlier, I have the book series Learn Chess the Right Way, as well as the World Champions Guide to Chess. There are also many videos out there. I have a very fun animated DVD called Learn Chess in 30 Minutes. That's really fun for anybody, or any, especially children or any beginner that just wants to start out from scratch. So there are all those resources available already. And, I'm glad to hear from fans or people who want to learn.
You know what, friend, I'm thinking about this, how amazing this is. We haven't talked about the access to language when it comes to chess. There's really no talking. You can play anybody from any part of the world. Tell us about that. Have you ever had to play people, and tell me how that feels to play someone who's not, talking your language, if you will, because there's no talking. But how do you connect the minds in this process?
Yes, indeed. Chess is its own language. And that's the beautiful thing. I visited the 92 countries so far in the world, most of them because of chess. And that's the beautiful thing, that I don't need to speak Chinese or Japanese or whatever the language in order to communicate with people when it comes to chess, because the chess moves are international. And I think it's a wonderful way to make friends. As you said, there is no boundary of the language, because I can enjoy playing chess against somebody from Australia or Brazil or Russia or anywhere in the world, whether we do speak or don't the same language. And that's one of the beautiful things about chess. And in fact, today you can play online 24/7, and you can play people from all around the world. And people do play millions and millions of games every single day, enjoying chess without limits.
Great talk, friend. Talk to us about, what do you do for your spare time? That's not chess. How do you take care of yourself? What do you do for self-care?
I love going to the gym. I like to swim. I like horseback riding. I love movies, music, most people. And I like spending time with my friends and family, of course.
All your travels around the world, have you seen, or can you tell us about a story similar to yours, if you will, that you know of that chess changed their life, and that your impact through the game has helped them change their life? Can you share with us a story, if you can recall, of so many?
Yeah, one of my favorite stories is that my foundation has held in partnership with the sponsors and universities many competitions for young people. And through that, we awarded over $7 million in scholarships and prizes. And one particular girl who came from the country Colombia, and she came to the competition. She was not the favorite, but she ended up winning. And by doing so, she won a full tuition and fee scholarship to Webster University. And she just finished her senior year in high school, but she didn't speak much English other than hi and bye. And she had to take a year to learn English from scratch. She did so. And after that, she came and she became part of the chess program at the university. And she became a 4.0 student and graduated with a degree and got an amazing job in, I think, biotech, and had a fantastic career. And so those are actually, I'd like to even quote her, which we recently added to my foundation's brochure. She said, "The Susan Polgar Foundation, through the annual Girls Invitational Tournament, provided me with the extraordinary opportunity to pursue higher education on a full tuition scholarship, which was a life changer." Luisa Mercado Mendoza. And these are the stories that why I'm doing it. You know, that's what I mean by giving back, Ben, changing one life at a time.
Friend, what an amazing story. Sounds like she was a Susan Polgar Jr., so to speak, right? She kind of broke barriers too, learned the language and did some amazing stuff. Before we let you go, friend, the floor is yours. Tell our listeners what you want them to remember about you, the movement, and the game of chess.
I'd like you to remember that if you have a dream, you have a passion, work hard at it, and you can and will succeed.
Amazing story, friend. You will succeed. In the pursuit of greatness, the path is not about reaching the top. It's about keeping it real, showing gratitude, and showing respect. The greatest leaders remain humble, even when they reach the pinnacle of their success. Let them keep playing checkers while you out here playing chess. Checkmate. Because on this platform it was built, because way too often as people, we were overlooked or labeled. And this is no longer our plight, and our fight is for anyone and everyone who feels a need to be understood. We are strong as individuals, but unstoppable when we unite. Tune in, friends, to another He's Just a Social Worker show, coming to another town near you real soon. We're out. Susan, thank you so much for such an amazing show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Please note that the views expressed here are my own and not a representation of my employers and clients. Thank you for listening. We're always here for you. Just message us and we'll get back to you within 24 hours. Thank you. More than just at He's Just a Social Worker. In memory of my mother, Matilde De La Rosa, this is dedicated to you, Mom. Miss you so much. En memoria de mi madre, Matilde de la Rosa, esto va dedicado a ti, mamá. Te extraño mucho.